and Norm Shealy. You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Welcome to Infinite Consciousness tonight, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr. Sorry about that. I didn't know it was time for me to go on air, so I was talking. Sorry. Tonight we're going to have with us Christine Waltermeyer, and we're going to talk about her book, The Natural Vegan Kitchen. How do we know which foods to get that are non-GMO? I hope she'll know about that. How to get the nutrients that we need and how to prepare them so that they taste good. How are you, Christine?
I'm wonderful. Great to be here, Eva.
Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
So before we get started, tell us a little bit about you and how you came to become a vegan and how you wrote this book. What drew you to write this book?
Yes. Well, it's been a long journey. About 18 years ago, I just started discovering the benefits of a vegetarian diet for the planet, for our health, and that the food can be delicious and satisfying. So I decided to go for it and go, you know, vegetarian and then later vegan. And at first I was actually a junk food vegan, as I mentioned in the book, and, you know, I actually didn't feel very good. So then I discovered macrobiotic cooking, which is a wonderful, nutritious way of eating that incorporates whole grains, legumes, fresh vegetables. It's all very nutrient-dense, and then I felt amazing. So then I decided to really learn more. I studied at the Cushy Institute, where I learned more macrobiotic cooking. I became a personal chef and cooked for clients who had cancer, and I saw how it impacted their lives in a great way, and I just wanted to reach more and more people, so I started teaching cooking classes. One thing led to another. I started a cooking school with a chef training program, and then I decided to write the book. So my goal has always been to positively impact as many people's lives as possible.
So you didn't start out as a total vegan?
No, I was just vegetarian for probably a year or two before I really, you know, just cut down, you know, on the cheese and cut out the milk. So it was a gradual process.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So how long did it take for you to see a difference in how you felt?
Well, after my year or two of being a junk food vegan, I'd say, you know, once I really got into macrobiotics and more nutritious eating, I really felt a difference almost instantly. It was like an epiphany experience having my first meal of brown rice and simple vegetables, like very simple food. I felt it instantly, the difference. And then
really?
From there, it just kept getting better and better.
So tell us about a macrobiotic. What is that?
Yeah. It's macro means, you know, long, and then biotic is life. So it's the art of living a long and healthy life. And really, that term came from George Osawa. He was like the granddaddy of macrobiotics, and he trained students back in Japan. And those students came over to America to help spread this way of healthy eating and living. And Michio Kushi was one of those students, he and his wife, Aveline Kushi. And it was at his institute where I studied and learned about it. And it's really a diet, it's also a diet and lifestyle, but the diet part focuses on whole grains like brown rice, millet, barley, beans like chickpeas, pinto beans, black beans, fresh vegetables, things like kale, carrot, squash, foods like miso soup, fermented foods, all these different foods to really just maximize our health and our digestion. And it really works wonders. Like I said, I've seen people recover from stage 4 cancer by eating this diet. It's amazing.
I'd love to hear some of your stories. Could you tell us a few before we get started?
Absolutely, yeah.
I'd love to hear. I know my listeners would like that.
Sure. One client that I worked with, he literally had stage 4 non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. He had tried all the conventional treatment he could get. He was really, like, maxed out. He had gotten a stem cell transplant, like, all the chemo and radiation he could get, and his cancer just kept recurring. And his oncologist at Sloan Kettering said, "I'm sorry, we really can't do anything more for you," and, you know, he was prepared to die. So his wife had heard about macrobiotics, and he thought, "What do I have to lose? I'll try this crazy diet." And for him, it worked. It reversed his cancer, and Today they have three beautiful daughters, and it's just like the greatest success story. And today his oncologist says, you know, whatever you're doing, just keep doing it. So it's
yeah, stop
really...
going to the oncologist. That's what you do. And start doing things like you do. I'm sorry. Allopathic doctors are for emergencies, you know, when you have a car wreck or something, from my perspective. Anyway, so what are the staples in your kitchen for a macrobiotic diet?
Yeah, so those whole grains, that's really a good one to have on hand. So I keep a variety of rices, like short grain brown rice, long grain rice, some basmati rice when I want to make a pudding. I keep other grains like whole oats. I love whole oat porridge this time of year. What else? Millet. There's just so many different grains. And then beans, of course. I keep a variety of, you know, dried chickpeas, lentils, split peas to make all my nice, you know, bean soups and bean burgers, things like that. And I also keep my pantry stocked with sea vegetables. These are super nutritious vegetables from the sea, things that might be not so familiar to us, like aramae and dulse and nori. These are a lot more common in the Japanese diet, but they're super nutrient-dense and great for our bone health. So, and, of course, my fresh vegetables. Every week, you know, I stock up on leafy green vegetables like kale, collard greens, sweet-tasting vegetables like winter squashes and carrots and onions, my root veggies. So I'm a real vegetable fanatic. And, of course, fresh fruits, you know, that kind of rounds out the picture when you want a little something sweet.
Now, your book is mainly a cookbook.
Yeah.
Tell me some of your favorite recipes in this cookbook.
Oh, gosh, you know, I my favorites, it's hard to even pick out my favorites, but I'm a big fan of soups. So I have a variety of soups, you know, from navy bean soup to, you know, my magical miso soup. That's one of my staples that really keeps me going. And some nice salads. My tempeh mock tuna salad is nice. And tempeh might be one of those less familiar foods. It's a fermented soy food, but it can be substituted with chickpeas. So that's kind of a nice one. You know, of course, the basics, like pressure-cooked brown rice. I swear I could just chew on pressure-cooked brown rice with a little bit of gamasio for, you know,
so
an amazing
how do you,
treat.
You have a child, don't you?
Yes, I do.
A girl. How do you deal with her at school? Does she go to a public school?
You know, she's still little, so I can pretty much, you know, more control what she's eating
now.
So I'm enjoying it while I can. She's not even two. She's turning two at the end of the month. But she actually, tonight, she chowed down on steamed kale. She can't get enough of it.
So oh, good for her. My little boy likes that, too.
Oh, that's great.
So how do you pick out your vegetables? Are you familiar with genetically modified foods?
Yes, I am, and I avoid them at all costs myself. I
yeah,
always
how do you
opt
pick
for
out
organic.
Your corn?
Yeah.
Get
corn,
how do you
see?
How do you know which corn to get?
I know. I mean, you do the best you can. I always choose organic corn. I just won't buy corn if it's not organic. But, you know, even within that, I guess, you know, the way corn is grown, there's cross-contamination, so you wonder if there really is truly, quote-unquote, organic corn anymore, unfortunately. But I at least always get organic and recommend that as well.
Okay. What about soy? Do you recommend eating soy?
You know, with soy, it's definitely
and you know
it's a
where
tricky
I'm
topic.
From.
And I know with even with our chef training program, we get many students who come through, you know, breast cancer survivors and folks who are avoiding soy. Men will often avoid soy, and we totally support them by offering, you know, soy-free options using sea salt instead of soy sauce, things like that. Personally, for myself, I tend to include traditionally consumed forms of soy, so a little bit of tamari soy sauce, a little bit of tempeh, the fermented soy product I mentioned, but all the things that were traditionally consumed in, you know, mostly countries like Japan and China, but not all these, like, soy bars and soy nuggets and soy smoothies. I don't do, like, the refined soy.
Do you do
And, again, I always do
vegetable?
Organic.
Oh, okay. Do you do textured vegetable protein?
I don't. You know, I always had trouble digesting that, and the more I researched it, I think it's one of those frankenfoods that's really not good to consume.
Yeah, me too. I went on this kick a couple of years ago where I decided I didn't want any substances from the the any milk products from some other species breast into my kid's body. So we started drinking soy, and we all got sick, really sick. We got really bad mood disorders and couldn't think. And so I was curious, what do you do for like a meaty kind of substance? Do you have something that you use?
Yeah, like if I make a shepherd's pie, I will actually use lentils. You know, believe it or not, they can add that kind of hearty ingredient. Or if I'm making a vegetarian burger, again, I will use like mashed up beans.
How do you make a veggie burger?
And also mushrooms. You know, sometimes you've been using dried mushrooms to get that kind of chewy texture in there. At various points in my life, I've done seitan, and then other times when I've done a gluten-free diet, I avoid the seitan, but that is a chewy meat substitute made out of wheat gluten. So it's not processed like, you know, textured vegetable protein, but again, a lot of people have the gluten issue, so that's just, you know.
So if you were making, I've never been to vegetarian, so I eat everything, but
okay.
A lot of people are curious about how to do it. Mm-hmm. If you were going to make a veggie burger, how would you do that?
Yeah, great question. So oftentimes I'll just cook extra, you know, brown rice, for example, or maybe a little bit of extra beans, and then the next day, just to creatively reinvent it, I'll make a burger. So I might even take equal portions of some cooked brown rice and maybe some cooked beans, and I'll saute some onion, maybe a little bit of celery. I'll mix that in there with some brown rice and beans, and I'll lightly mash it so it kind of binds together. And you can even add things to bind it, like tomato paste would give it flavor and help it to stick together. Sometimes ground flax seeds. You know, you have to have some kind of binding in there, breadcrumbs, and then just form them into little patties. And then you can often roll them in a little bit of cornmeal or arrowroot, and you can either bake them or fry them. So that's just one possibility for burgers. But sometimes I'll even just do a portobello mushroom cap. That's very easy to do. You just marinate it, a little bit of Italian dressing, and then just put that on the grill, and that's a really easy option.
Do you do raw foods too? Does your book
I
talk
do,
about
especially
that?
In the summer. I like to mix it up. I've never done total raw foods. That just doesn't agree with my body type. I get too cold, but I like to do maybe like 50-50 during the summer.
Okay. So how do you recommend to your people to get enough nutrition? And I told you I was going to ask this question specifically. You mentioned in your book about vitamin D and B and some of the B vitamins. How do you?
Yeah, so I in my book, I do recommend supplementing with vitamins B12 and D2, which is a vegan form of vitamin D. So, you know, those are two that you can't really get from plant foods. And you know, to some extent, you can get the vitamin D from sunshine, but as you mentioned, you know, there's mixed reviews on whether that's even a good source. So it's, you know, something to look into, and I'm always learning myself. You know, I kind of shared what I know about the vitamin supplementation in my book, but I'm always open to new information. In fact, it's very interesting. I was just reading an article by Dr. John McDougall. He's the author of several national bestsellers, including The McDougall Plan, 12 Days to Dynamic Health. And he's got an article that vitamin D requirements might be actually inflated, that, you know, it kind of looks like we're all deficient, but he feels that the values for normal are exaggerated, and he definitely, you know, backs up his work with a lot of, you know, studies. And so it's just interesting. It's just one more theory. Who knows?
It is an interesting topic. It's something that I've been life for the past 15 years. That's all I did was research vitamins, and I'm passionate about it. So I'd love to hear some more stories, if you have any more interesting stories like that, man.
Yeah, just, gosh, I mean, that was probably the most, you know, profound story. But over the years, I've just, in fact, I think the, the Smithsonian Institute actually has, I think it's 20 documented cases from the Cushy Institute of cancer survivors. And I met some of these people. Judy McKenney is one of them. She, I believe, also had the non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And Christina Perrello, she's an award-winning TV show host. She does macrobiotic and vegan cooking. She has many cookbooks, and she's a living example. She also recovered from cancer, from leukemia. just by changing her diet. So it's really incredible. And also the children I've met. I've met children who've been raised on, you know, macrobiotic diet, and they just glow. There's just something about them. They're just so, like, healthy and radiant, and they don't get sick like other children or have all these peanut allergies. So it's really, I think it really speaks for itself.
Talk about that a little bit. It just clicked in my head what you said, peanut allergies. You know, I've never thought about that.
I said everything,
and I never thought about it until you said it. Talk about that.
Right. And I've heard Michio Kushi talk about this because it's something that even when I was a child, you know, there weren't so many peanut allergies and all these allergies going on. So Michio Kushi has talked about how he's seen the gradual, you know, it sounds grim, but like decline in our health. And a lot of that is reflected in allergies, and that's related in Chinese medicine. They see that as related to the health of the liver. So a lot of modern people have livers that are just not in great shape. They're not able to deal with allergens and, you know, things that we should be able to process. And fortunately, my daughter, she can eat, you know, she's, like I said, not even two, and she can eat peanuts and nuts. And so I'm like, oh, this is just great, because I really feel sorry for a lot of parents who deal with that. That must be very difficult.
Yeah. I made cornbread yesterday because I love it, and I made soup, and I can't have it. And not, I mean, 10 minutes after I eat it, it makes me mean. I know that sounds crazy, but it does. Do you see that in some of your people who eat genetically modified foods?
You know, the repercussions of eating genetically modified foods have not even been found yet, but, you know, what's going on with this splicing salmon cells into a tomato, like, we just can't know what that's going to result in as far as our health goes. So, you know, sometimes you do see direct results like you experienced, and then I wonder, you know, is our increasing rise in cancers and things like that related to what we're doing with our food supply?
So how do you make things like cakes and things without using eggs?
Great question.
How do you make them get thick and hold together?
You can easily replace eggs with using some other kind of binder. So flax seeds go a long way, and they're great as far as a healthy source of omega-3 fatty acids, so I really like those. So I'll often substitute, for one egg, I'll substitute a quarter cup of either applesauce or even cooked pumpkin puree, because it's got that kind of sticky quality that you want for binding. Or the flax seeds, a little, maybe like a tablespoon or two of flax seeds mixed with enough water to get a quarter cup of the flax meal with the water. So that's a great way to replace the eggs. And also, Fran Costigan, she's like the queen of vegan baking, and she's got wonderful books where she doesn't even use the flax seeds, but just her combination of ingredients. She's got this cake called Chocolate Cake to Live For, and it's just amazing, and you know, it binds together, it rises nicely, just with her great combination of ingredients.
Where do you get things like Amazaki?
Amazaki, I know, that's the one thing people have said about my book. They're like, well, you know, there's some ingredients that are kind of foreign in there, and I try to explain them in the glossary. So Amazaki is it's a fermented rice beverage. It's thick and sweet, creamy, like a milkshake, and it's just literally fermented brown rice. And where you can find that is generally a health food store. So that's where I do kind of encourage people to, you know, if they're referring to my book, to just visit your local health food store and demystify some of these foods. Just, you know, ask folks who work there where these products are. And if you can't find them, you know, there's often something you can substitute. If you couldn't find Amazaki and you wanted to make my pudding, you could find almond milk. Heck, you know, even at Walmart, they sell almond milk these days, so you can substitute other ingredients.
So I'm curious, are you familiar with eating for your blood type?
To some extent, I have to say I haven't read the book, but I did study at the Institute for Integrative Nutrition, where they teach the different theories, and they do talk about that. So I am familiar with the concept, with the theory.
I have found personally, when I don't eat enough meat, I don't feel good. So how would I eat if I'm one of those people that need that heavy protein to feel good? I guess that's
I would, exactly as you mentioned, I would really focus on the protein. So I would, you know, make sure that you're having at least, you know, 2 to 3 servings of protein in a day. Like, you could have a high protein breakfast, including quinoa in your porridge. That's a high protein grain, and maybe putting some nuts in there if there's no nut sensitivity. for lunch and dinner, definitely including beans in the form of having maybe a hummus wrap or a salad with beans on it. Maybe for dinner, having lentil loaf. You know, really getting the beans in there for adequate protein.
So, how do you deal with the bloating?
You know, I find that initially there's some transition when you're getting used to beans if you're not used to eating so many. So maybe in the beginning someone, you know, might combine the beans with a little bit of, you know, if they're used to having a turkey loaf, maybe they start to do like half turkey and half beans, and like you kind of make a gradual transition so you don't get so bloated. Chewing really well is important, including fermented foods helps to process and break down the beans. Also, I have in my book like a whole sequence of steps in cooking your beans. I find if I eat beans out at a restaurant, sometimes they just don't digest well, and I have pretty good digestion. But when I make them at home, it's no problem because I use kombu or bay leaves, which helps to you know, make them more digestible. Kombu is a sea vegetable, which helps to maximize digestion. And soaking them overnight is key, discarding the soak water. I could go on and on. I don't know if you wanted this much detail.
I want to hear all your little tips like that.
Oh, yeah.
Things that I don't know to ask, because it's a cookbook.
Right,
so that kind of makes it hard for me to come up with questions. So I don't know all the little things that you know like that. I want to know lots of things like that.
Yeah. So just to continue on the beans, also, even cooking them with sweet-tasting vegetables like onions, carrots, squash, that helps with digestion. Not adding salt until the end, that's a common mistake where someone will add salty seasonings while the beans are cooking. You always want to wait till the end. And sometimes your beans just don't ever really get soft. I don't know if you've had that experience, but sometimes you can cook beans, you know, for hours practically, and they're just still crunchy. And in that case, I'd say throw them out and start over, because you may have gotten old beans. If beans, dried beans, are around too long and they're old, they just won't cook properly. So those are just a few of my little tips on beans.
What about, fermented foods. I'd like to know how to do that.
Yes.
And how many kinds of foods can you ferment? And what do you recommend fermenting?
Yeah. My favorite thing to ferment is vegetables. So I will often make homemade vegetable pickles. One of my favorites is actually, you know, often, you know, a lot of us cut off the broccoli crowns and we just throw away the stems. Well, I say save those stems. They make amazing pickles. So I usually just take a peeler or my knife and I cut off all the tough skin on the outside of the broccoli stem. And on the inside, there's this nice, tender, it's just a delicious texture. It's almost like a water chestnut in a way. And you just thinly slice that, and put them in a jar. And in that glass jar, I'll put a mixture, and it's equal parts. I'll put one-third apple juice, one-third water, and this sounds like a lot of salt, but one-third soy sauce. I mean, pickles are a little bit salty. That's what ferments them.
If someone was doing a non-soy diet,
they could probably do umeboshi vinegar, which is a Japanese salty vinegar, or even sea salt.
You use one-third what?
One-third apple juice to give it a little sweetness.
Okay.
Yep, one-third cup, I should say, and one-third cup of water. And then I usually use one-third cup of soy sauce, but like I said, if someone was avoiding soy for some reason, you could do umeboshi vinegar. That's another one of my obscure health foods. It's not so obscure. You can find it really at any health food store, but you do have to find it at a health food store. So you got that saltiness in there, a little bit of sweet from the apple juice, and then the water. And you just let that sit, lightly covered, maybe with like a little cheesecloth, or just lightly covered with the lid so that the natural airborne bacteria can get in there and create the fermentation. And then you just let it sit for 24 hours, and the next day, put the lid on the jar, put it in the refrigerator, and they'll keep for about a week.
Is that how you make sauerkraut, too?
Sauerkraut's a little bit more involved, and I have to admit, I actually buy my sauerkraut, but I do get the one that's refrigerated, so it's still got those active enzymes.
Because I live up in the mountains, the Appalachian Mountains, all the farmers always tell me, we just moved up here in the spring, When it comes time for harvesting, make sure you have a farmer's almanac, because if you don't do it with the signs, it's not going to work right. Do you do that?
Interesting.
Do you do that? Use that? They said if you don't do sauerkraut with the signs, it will not come out right.
Interesting. I haven't heard that, but I don't really understand in the Farmer's Almanac and
I don't really understand
the sun
it.
And the moon and the natural earth patterns. That's very interesting. I'd love to learn more about that.
I don't really understand it, but I got a Farmer's Almanac and I'm gonna see if I can't comprehend what it says.
Yeah, right.
What are some other tips? That's the kind of tips that I want to know, things that I don't know to ask you.
Yeah, so fermented foods is a big one. Food combining, because, like you say, digestion is key, and, a lot of people will kind of blame it on the beans, but sometimes it's even food combinations. And when you are eating more plant foods, even if someone's not vegetarian, but if they're just starting to include more plant-based foods in their diet, they'll often notice, like, whoa, got a little, social discomfort going on. And that's because we may not be used to all that fiber. So, you want to chew really well and, be aware of foods that don't combine well. So, for example, proteins and fruits will often not mix well. So beans and then, combined with apples or citrus or something like that, that's a recipe for disaster. That won't sit well in your stomach and you'll feel bloated and not good. So, watching out for things like that is helpful. And I really can't emphasize enough the importance of chewing. It's amazing. When I was at the Cushy Institute, people would just be sitting there for, like an hour, just chewing and chewing and chewing. I thought, what are all these people doing? I thought they were crazy. And then I tried it, because really what they advocate is, maximizing our digestion by chewing everything until it's almost liquid in your mouth. And it's amazing. I mean, you have so much more energy when you're chewing well and digesting well. Your body's not wasting time and energy on trying to break down your food. It's already arriving in your stomach, more processed because of the enzymes in your saliva. So then you have more energy for living life. That's a profound thing.
I imagine you would have to eat less food, too.
Exactly. It's a great tool for weight loss. It slows you down. You're more, you're just more present with your meals, too. I find it brings more presence to the rest of your life because you're slowing down with your meals. You're not multitasking. You're really focusing on one thing at a time. And that's just a nice stress reliever in our modern world.
Now, when you buy rice, do you buy Uncle Ben's rice or do you buy some other kind of rice?
I really like the Lundberg organic rice. I get that. I'm a big health food store shopper, although, I have to really applaud our local grocery stores, too. Like around here, we have Giant grocery stores out in Pennsylvania, and they have a lot of health food products. So, but I really do like to get the organic short grain rice and long grain rice. But yeah, Uncle Ben's is great too. I always say, if someone's starting out and they just want to shop at their local store, Uncle Ben's is a good thing to start with, sure.
What does it converted rice mean? Is it as nutritious for you though as those regular whole grain rices?
That's a good question. I would guess no, because it may be quicker cooking time. And generally when they're trying to process a food to make it cook in less time, it loses some of its nutrition. It gets a little bit more exposed to air and oxidizing, so it may not be as nutritious. I tend to go more for just, it's just packaged as short grain or long grain brown rice, and it's been minimally processed. They just remove the outer hull, but it does take a little longer to cook.
So you have a cooking school, right?
Yes, I do.
What's the name of it?
It's the Natural Kitchen Cooking School.
If I were to come to your class, what would be the first thing what would our first day be?
First day is going over basics like sanitation and safety and, how to care for your knife and how to slice and dice. We get our students right in there learning cutting skills and really introducing them to the whole world of plant-based foods, because, a lot of people may not be familiar with what the different grains and beans are and how to cook them and make them taste delicious. So our first weekend, we focus on whole grains, because that is such a staple on a plant-based diet, and they learn all the different ways to cook them. So they make vegetarian sushi, little millet croquettes, grain puddings like a quinoa pudding, and we do like a hands-on cooking class in the morning, and then we eat a delicious lunch all together, And then the afternoon, they get a new, you know, like a nutrition lecture, or we have these great guest teachers who talk about, you know, raw foods or healing diets, festive party food, topics like that. So it's really, I love it. It's just such an exciting course. I love to see the transformation that happens over 8 months.
So I'd like to go back to some of your tips that you know. I don't know which questions to ask you since it's a cookbook, so I'd like for you to dig inside of you and see if you can figure out some of those tips for me, you know, like the,
oh, sure, yeah. The, and actually, you know, the, in my book, I actually have, you know, a few of the keys to living a long, healthy life, and one of them is eating in harmony with your natural surroundings. So one of the things that I really advocate is selecting foods that are seasonal and grown local. I mean, that's becoming a bigger movement, you know, becoming a locavore. And it's really important because environmentally it saves on, you know, the shipping, all the energy that's required for shipping foods from faraway countries. But it's also better for your health. It's really what our grandmothers knew and our grandmothers were forced to do to some extent because we didn't have as many of the shipping methods that we have today. But, you know, the whole idea is that foods that are grown in tropical areas like bananas and coconut are perfectly designed to keep the people who live in those countries cool and comfortable. They're very cooling. So if we live in, for example, a four-season climate, we like I do here in the Northeast, once winter comes, if I'm eating tons of bananas and coconut, where is my body going to want to be? It's going to be resounding with the tropics. I'm going to want to get out of here and go to the Bahamas. So really to sustain ourselves in the winter, we need to eat more seasonal fruits instead of bananas. We should be eating more like apples and pears and things that are available in the winter time in the Northeast. So I just love that theory. I just feel like, you know, it's easy to get lost in the supermarket of like, oh, I can just buy all these different things. And we've kind of lost some of that sense of, well, gee, what really is indigenous to this climate?
So do you use, when you're cooking beans, do you use canned beans? Do you do them yourself? Or what do you recommend that people... Give me some of your cooking tips.
Yeah.
I'm interested in
I
that.
Love cooking
any
my
of
beans
your cooking
from scratch.
Tips.
In fact, I'm a big believer in cooking in bulk in general. Like when I cook my grains, I'll make a big batch, more than what I need for one meal, so that I can either freeze some or over the next few days I can reinvent it into, like we were talking about, a little burger or making a dessert, a rice pudding or rice porridge. Same thing with my beans. I'll make a big batch of beans, and I'll freeze some. It's cheaper, and it's healthier than buying all the canned beans. Plus, these days, there's a lot of concerns about the BPA that's present in the lining of these cans. But there is one company, which I happen to love, Eden Foods, and they have BPA-free cans. So I get their canned beans. They're also free of sodium, and they're cooked with kombu, so they're more digestible. So that's my favorite company. I do keep their canned beans in my pantry, but mostly I do prefer to, when I have time, cook them from scratch.
Is that the one that has the white lining in the cans?
You know, it may. I think it does. You're right. Yeah,
that's
it is white, actually.
That's something I've started
that's
seeing
right.
lately. White lining in our cans.
Yeah.
So I was wondering about that.
Yes.
And, so
you know, one of my other tips for enjoying a long, healthy, happy life is just maintaining balance in your life and diet. So there's like the whole concept in macrobiotics of yin and yang, and these are the two different energies that they study in, you know, a lot of Chinese medicine and, you know, these Eastern healing modalities like acupuncture is based also on yin and yang. And so those are the forces of contraction and expansion that we can easily see are all around us in nature. And I really appreciate that macrobiotics is kind of understanding that in our daily diet, for example, salt is a very yang food, whereas sugar is very yin. So there's that, like, interplay. So if we're eating lots of, you know, I don't know if you've ever done this at a party where you're eating, like, dry, crunchy, hard pretzels and chips, and then all of a sudden you want to go to the opposite and maybe have something sweet or even, like, an alcoholic beverage to kind of balance it out. And understanding is that's just the body seeking balance, you know, the yin and the yang. So understanding that if we eat more in the middle, foods that are in the middle are like grains, beans, vegetables, temperate fruits, we're going to feel more in balance and not be torn between those two extremes. I often tell people if if they're dealing with alcoholism and, you know, alcohol addiction, they've got to get off the meat and the salt and all the very young foods that are making them crave the opposite.
So now that you've brought that up, doesn't grains metabolize the sugars and do the same thing?
You know, they're much more gentle in the body because they're a complex carbohydrate. They've got the whole package of fiber, minerals, vitamins. Our body recognizes that as a whole food. So they're broken down gradually, and they actually help stabilize blood sugar. They're great for people with hypoglycemia and even diabetes.
Okay, that's good to know.
Yeah.
So get some other tips that you could... You said expansion and contraction. Which one's expansion and which one's contraction, yin or yang?
Yeah, expansion,
and what do you mean by that?
Is yin and contraction is yang.
What do
so
you mean
even,
by that, though?
Yeah, so like the downward contracting force of nature is what's required to create a root vegetable, for example. A carrot, it's reaching down into the earth. It's compact. It's more dry than other vegetables. That's going to be more yang than, say, kale or collards, which are leafy. They're rising up toward the sun. They have that upward expansive energy. So, you know, those are great foods for someone who tends to be more, you know, stressed out, more tense. You know, that's more of a yang condition. And then they'd want to have more yin foods to balance them out in a healthy way. Whereas someone who's more got a yin condition where they might be more relaxed and easygoing, but they might tend to space out and not get the job done, and they need a little bit more focus in their life. So the perfect foods for them would be more yang foods like root vegetables, slightly salty foods like miso soup. Those are going to provide more of that contractive energy that will bring them together and help them to focus in their life.
I've never heard anything about that. That's very interesting. What
it's
else can you tell me? Because I've never heard it, so I'd like more information.
Yeah, and that is specifically something that I learned in macrobiotics. So any books by Michio Kushi, Kushi, would highlight, you know, more about yin and yang and to understand that. But that could be like a whole lifetime of study in itself. So I often just tell people kind of an easy way to achieve that balance is to focus on three different categories of vegetables. Root vegetables, which would be like carrots and parsnips. The round or ground vegetables are things more like squash, onions, green cabbage, cauliflower, things that grow close to the ground level and have a round shape. And then there are the leafy green vegetables like kale, collard greens, watercress, dandelion greens. And if you just sort of keep in mind those three vegetable categories, that really makes it easy. It simplifies it, and then you're getting a variety of yin and yang vegetables, for example.
That's interesting. Round or ground vegetables? You know,
yes.
I interviewed this guy, I think Robert O. Young was his name. Have you read any of his work?
No, I haven't.
His wife is a nutritionist, and he's, I can't remember if he's an MD or an ND, but either way, he said, He has started talking about not eating root vegetables because the human body is made up of light, and root vegetables get no light. What do you think about that? I don't know what I think about it.
Wow, there's always some new theory out there. That's
I don't know what to. I don't know what to think about that. I mean, I see it on one perspective, but then why do we have them if we don't need them on the other end?
Yeah, exactly. And they're such a good source of, you know, carrots in particular, beta carotene.
Yeah.
Which is a very protective antioxidant. So I guess it's, you know, good to kind of sort through information and find what works for you.
So going back to the fermented foods, what are some other things that you ferment?
Well, vegetables is, you know, one of my favorite things to ferment. But as I mentioned, tempeh is a fermented food. And I haven't gotten adventurous enough to make my own tempeh, but I know it's possible where you just take your, you know, your cooked soybeans and combine it with a, you know, a starter to make that fermented food. I know that kombucha is actually very popular right now. Kombucha is a, it's like a fermented tea, and people often consume that. It almost tastes like beer. Sorry?
How would you make that?
You know, there too. Maybe I don't venture out enough with the fermentation. I kind of stick with the vegetables. That's my thing. But I also do make amasaki. I do make my own amasaki, and
what
that's very
that?
Easy to make. You just need the koji. Koji is the starter to create the fermentation, and it's just rice that's been inoculated with these spores. And so you just combine that with cooked sweet brown rice. Sweet brown rice is a little bit stickier and sweeter tasting than regular brown rice. And you just let that sit overnight, and it creates this fermentation. And then the next morning you just can either puree it or you can have it a little chunky. But that's a traditional Japanese, it's like a little dessert. It's very mildly sweet. So you can either buy that store-bought or, you know, make it yourself.
Okay. Any other things that you can tell us about, any of your special tips?
Yes. You know, along the lines of fermentation, this is kind of a fun one to make. You know, I've always been a fan of bread, and yet, you know, sometimes bread can cause a little bloating or be hard to digest, but you can very easily make your own little chickpea tortillas. And what I like to do as I combine equal parts, so let's say 1 cup of chickpea flour, and that, again, you may need to go to a health food store to find it, with 1 cup of water, and you just mix that together with a whisk and let it sit overnight. So there's kind of like this light fermentation process going on overnight. And then the next morning, you just heat up a good old-fashioned cast iron skillet, rub it with a little bit of oil, preferably a high heat, you know, an oil that can tolerate high heat, like grapeseed oil. That's one of my favorite high heat oils, or safflower oil. And then you just pour a bit of this batter in there, the chickpea batter, and you take a spoon, the back of a spoon, and just spiral it out, you know, toward the outside, so that you're creating this thin little crepe that looks like a little crepe. And then once the edges start to brown and pull up a little bit from the pan, you just flip it over and do the other side. And I've made these for people, and they just go crazy over them. You can either make like sweet fillings, you could put a little almond butter and your favorite like all fruit jam in there and roll them up like a little jelly roll and have them as a sweet little breakfast crepe, or you can have them as like a savory tortilla and put a little bit of hummus in there and some sprouts and veggies. And it's just nice because it's gluten-free, it's very digestible because fermented foods tend to be more digestible. They provide us with beneficial bacteria, you know, rather than spending money on probiotics. Or, you know, even if you do take probiotics, it's just great to get extra beneficial bacteria, and this really helps to maximize digestion.
Well, that's a great thing.
Yeah, so those are
fun. So we have about 10 minutes left.
Oh,
what
my
do
gosh,
you want to talk
wow,
about?
It's going so fast.
Huh. What do you want to fill those 10 minutes with?
You know, I could go on and on with my little tips for...
That's what I'd like for you to do.
Yeah, yeah. So I would say, if, you know, if someone's wanting to get started with more plant-based recipes, you know, just this past weekend in our chef training program, we were going over menu planning and, you know, stocking your pantry. And, you know, it's really key to stock your pantry with, you know, these items that I've talked about, the whole grains, the dried beans, getting your fresh produce, and also the right seasonings to make it flavorful, so maybe a little bit of whole grain mustard, you know, the soy sauce if there's not a soy allergy, or sea salt, your herbs, your spices, some healthy cooking oils, you know, maybe doing a little pantry clean out and getting rid of ingredients that are old or that you don't want to be using anymore, and just getting like nice new healthy ingredients. And that really makes a difference, because then, you know, like, for example, tonight, you know, I'm already thinking of, like, okay, what am I going to have for breakfast tomorrow morning? I feel like having steel-cut oatmeal. So what I like to do is I cook it the night before. I take my steel-cut oats, and I usually do a ratio of, like, 1 to 4 or 1 to 5. I'll take a cup of my steel-cut oats, which are very high in fiber. They're much more nutritious than just regular rolled oats or, you know, minute oats or something like that. And you put them in a pot with 4 or 5 cups of water, and you bring it up to boil, and then you just lower the heat and lightly cover it so it doesn't cook over, and you simmer it for about 5-10 minutes, and then you just put the lid on, shut off the heat, and let it sit overnight on your stove. And this kind of imitates like the old-fashioned you know, cooking on the old coal stove overnight. It kind of imitates that nice heartiness. And then the next morning, all you have to do is really just reheat them, and then you can top it off with some, you know, raisins and cinnamon and maybe a handful of walnuts, and you've got a really nutritious breakfast that's, you know, ready to go. So, you know, planning ahead and having the right ingredients on hand and just taking it step by step, you know, rather than getting overwhelmed and doing like a big overhaul of your diet, say, okay, this week I'm going to include dark leafy green vegetables. I'm going to have steamed kale a few times this week. I'm going to try a new bean. You know, just kind of baby stepping it rather than, you know, going too crazy in the beginning.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Oh, since there's something happened, you just cut off.
Oh.
I heard baby steps and then you just left.
Oh, no. Oh, gosh. Yeah. So
what was after that?
Oh, okay. So, yeah. So, but I was just kind of ending with that tip of, like, just kind of baby stepping it, not going too crazy, you know, in the beginning and overwhelmed, you know, getting overwhelmed. Because, you know, when I've done health coaching with people, sometimes I find people say, oh, I want to eat healthier and I just want to, you know, just go 100% and just do this all the way. And I always find that backfires. It's much better to go gradually and include things, you know, along the way, like new foods, like I'm mentioning whole grains and beans. And sometimes people ask me how they do it eating out. But really, you know, my parents, God bless them, they've been totally open to, you know, eating healthier themselves. And they'll go to local steakhouses and just choose more of the plant-based options. They'll load up on, like, a sweet potato. They'll get the broccoli without the butter. They'll get the salad bar with all the beans and everything. And it's amazing how you can just go to, you know, restaurants and ask for, oftentimes they'll have, like, a whole grain pasta and just ask them to load it up with vegetables to make, like, a pasta primavera. So there's always healthy options out there. You just have to, you know, plan ahead a little bit and have that intention of including more, you know, fresh foods and vegetables into your diet. So it's
be creative. See, most people don't know where to start. What should they, which things should they start with first? The greens, the carrots and the greens and the beans and the things like green beans. Or do they start with the more protein-based thing? Which thing do they, if they're going to take it slow, which thing do they do first?
You know, that's a very good question. And I think, you know, it should really go a little bit with someone's intuition as well. Like if they feel more drawn to, like, gee, you know, like yourself, you know, feeling like you need more protein, it's like, okay, let's conquer those beans. Let's get those beans in there and really focus on some good, hearty, plant-based protein. So that would be a great place to start for someone who really wants that protein in their diet, whereas somebody else might feel more drawn to, like, gee, you know, those leafy greens really seem intriguing and I want to learn more about those. So, you know, maybe for someone like that, they would start to go to the produce section of their local market and experiment with getting even just some arugula, putting arugula into their salad, picking out some kale. Kale's very easy to make. You literally just take the kale, pull it off the stem, rip it up into little pieces, put it in a steamer basket over maybe like a half an inch of water, and boil that water and just steam it until it's nice and tender. And you can top it off with your favorite salad dressing and, you know, have that as a side vegetable a few nights a week. So that could be a good place to start as well. And for myself, I know I used to be like a raging sugaraholic. You know, I was just like hooked on donuts and you name it. I grew up in Pennsylvania Dutch country where we, you know, we live on shoo fly pie and whoopie pies and all that stuff. So I remember asking a macrobiotic counselor, like, how the heck am I going to get myself off sugar? And his response really surprised me because I thought he'd say, like, okay, we got to go cold turkey here or something, and I was bracing myself for it. But instead he said, get really good at making healthy desserts. And I was like, what? And he was right. That was his magical advice, and it really worked. So I've become masterful at making healthy little sweets and nutritious cookies and puddings, and I find if I have those on hand, it keeps me out of the, you know, chocolate cake out there, you know, floating around wherever I might be out and about. If I see something that looks tempting, I just remember, like, oh, I've got something at home that's just as satisfying and way healthier, so I'm going to hold out for that. So
absolutely.
I would say
so
anyone with a sweet tooth, which a lot of people have, you know, try your hand at making healthy desserts, and that can really make a difference.
What's your favorite one that you think's the best? that's easy to carry around?
That's a good question. I have so many favorites, but like tonight, for example, I gave my daughter a little bit of it's a rice coconut pudding. I actually take coconut milk and I cook the rice into it, and you can add a little bit of cinnamon, you can add some currants or raisins, a little bit of vanilla. It's so easy to make, and it's just so satisfying, especially when it's a little colder outside this time of year, a nice warm rice pudding. So that's one of my personal favorites.
Okay. Do you want to tell people how to find you and your website again and how to contact you if they have any questions?
Yes. I have a website. It's www.naturalkitchenschool.com. And on that homepage, we have a Facebook page, we have a blog, we have Twitter, all the ways to stay connected. So, we'd love to have people, connect with us. And yes, again, the name of my book is The Natural Vegan Kitchen, through Book Publishing Company. And I'm trying to think what else. I love
Did
hearing
you say
from
your
if
website?
Anyone... What's that?
I might have missed it. Did you say your website?
Oh, yeah, my website is naturalkitchenschool.com.
Is there
and
anything
that has
you
information about
think
our
of
school, the chef training
to
program? It also has our, my cookbook on there. And, so that would be a good way for people to find out more. We have recipes on there that folks can try. So I would love it if anyone wants to visit our website.
Well, it's a fabulous book. I really enjoyed some of your recipes that I've used so far, and I know I'm going to enjoy using them in the future. So everybody take a look at Christine's book, The Natural Vegan Kitchen. Thank you, Christine. And
thank you,
thank
Eva.
You
it's been a pleasure.
For taking the time to write this book.
Uh-huh.
You did a good job.
Oh, thanks
thank
so
you.
Much.
All right, take care and good night.
You too. Good night.